Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear radio program. I am your host, Susan Larison-Danz, and on today's show, we are going to have quite a fascinating and uplifting conversation with a survivor of the Joplin, Missouri tornado that struck almost 1 year ago today. It was actually Sunday, May 22nd, so a year ago this weekend. And the Joplin tornado was a very devastating tornado, as I know many of us probably remember from the news. And it was rated an EF5, which is a very catastrophic level. Our guest's name is Ann Leach, and Ann's home was destroyed. And Ann is also a grief counselor. And Ann took this opportunity to basically, what as I see it, she really walked the walk of her work and in her life. And she, as she was rebuilding her own life, she assisted others as they rebuilt theirs. And she also created the Creative Cottage with the help of local businesses, which is a safe haven for people recovering from loss. So we have quite an interesting show today. If you would like to call in to today's show to ask a question of Ann, our guest call-in number is 310-807-5104. We also have a chat room open where you are free to comment or ask questions, and I do convey questions to the guest from the chat room as well. And I do welcome all of you who are listening to this show in the archive as well. So without further delay, I'd like to bring on Ann Leach, and I look forward to talking with her. Okay, get her on here. There she is. Ann, welcome
Hello.
To the Frontier Beyond Fear.
Oh, thanks so much, Susan. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, I am just so happy to have you on today. And, you know, I used to live in the Kansas City area. In fact, I lived there for at least 10 years, and I remember Joplin.
Oh, my gosh.
We drove through Joplin when we would go down to Silver Dollar City. That was on the way.
Yeah.
And I remember it.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a favorite of my son's. And so when I heard about the tornado, I immediately thought of that and just the area and such devastation in people's lives. And I'm so relieved to hear how people are recovering. And I guess that we should launch our conversation today. If you could perhaps tell a little bit of your own story about what happened and also your background.
Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to. I got into this work, you know, what all of the experts and gurus say, you know, teach what you know or write about what you know. And it took me a few years to remember what I know, and that is a long history of loss in my own life. I lost both parents. I'm an only child, and by the time I was 16, every man in my life was dead. And I don't know, that just kind of strikes me as unique and odd. My father, both grandfathers, some uncles on my dad's side, etc. And so for many years, it was me, my mother, and her mother. And today, I'm down to, interestingly enough, four cousins on my dad's side of the family and four cousins on my mom's, and of course their families, and they've been very supportive through all of this. But that living with loss really shifted my perspective about life, and as I've done my own personal development work, I got in touch with that part of the loss and how it shifted my beliefs about death. And so I really feel that that is my purpose, is to help people recognize that any kind of transition like that, we can release ourselves in this physical moment, the belief that it is something to be feared and that there's dread associated with it, to really focusing on acceptance and celebration of the life that we have right here and now. And so that's a little bit about how I moved into the grief coaching and grief recovery aspect of my life coaching business. But as far as the tornado goes, that particular day in May 22nd, was a Sunday, and it's much like today is here in southwest Missouri. The sun is out, it's beautiful temperatures, and the sky is clear. And so the news media was predicting heavy rainstorms and you know, severe thunderstorms. And I thought, well, I have time to go to the gym for a 30-minute workout before it starts raining too badly. And so I did that. And when I got home, my routine was just to kick off my shoes, drop my purse and keys, and, you know, go on in the house from the garage. And as I pulled in, I lived in a duplex in Duquesne, which is a little village right outside of Joplin. Mm-hmm. And as I pulled in, my neighbor, who's a bit older, she works at Freeman Hospital, which was one that was not affected by the devastation, but she worked a three-day weekend and usually didn't get home until early evening, but her front door was open, and we always checked on each other during any kinds of storms. So I called, and it was actually her granddaughter who answered the phone, and she was visiting from Arkansas, and as we were talking and just, you know, chatting and catching up, what seemed like almost immediately, the winds picked up and we heard the tornado sirens, but it was the wind that really got my attention. And I said, you know, I think we need to go to safety. And at about that moment, windows in the back of my duplex started popping in and the glass was shattering. So I ran to the only room I had without windows, which was the bathroom. Somehow in my brain, I remembered that rule. You go where there are no windows. And I hunkered down in front of the bathroom sink and cabinet for towels, that kind of thing. And so the layout of the room was that sink with the underneath cabinet, then the toilet, and then the bathtub. It was a very small room. And at one point, a piece of sheetrock just came and landed right over my head, and it formed kind of a teepee against the wall that the sink and the vanity mirror were on. And, of course, it shattered the mirror. They don't tell you that part. When they say windows, they forget to mention no mirrors either.
That's right. But, what if you have a very large one and a lot of people
do
that?
Exactly. So I heard that mirror shatter, and of course I'm hearing the wood, you know, being ripped up and the walls starting to come down. I mean, I'm aware of this noise, but this piece of sheetrock, I believe, is what saved my life. And when I remember hearing feeling the calm after the storm, I looked up and I thought, That's interesting. There's no roof.
You can see the sky.
Yes. And, of course, it's raining. And I did yell help at one point in the middle of it all as the eye of the tornado went over me. But it was just a very surreal experience. I wasn't necessarily out of my body, but I did, I know, it's a form of protection, just kind of mentally check out, you know, although I was conscious of everything. But I remember yelling for help and realizing, well, nobody's going to hear you.
No one to help, yeah. Well, there may have been at a higher level someone to help.
Yes, most definitely. And then I looked down. I still had my phone in my hand, and so I looked down, and I saw water just pouring over it. And
wow.
I thought, okay, well, that's a done deal. And so I powered down my phone and just tossed it back under the debris. And it was a couple of hours later when I realized how stupid that was and was able to get someone to crawl in and retrieve it for me. But, so anyway, there's the calm, and I climb out and just, you know, see this disaster zone all around me. And my neighbor's granddaughter came running to rescue me. And we walked up to our landlord's home, again, barefoot, because my shoes were suddenly nowhere to be found.
Oh, and the rubble must have been hard to walk on.
Yes, yes. There were trees everywhere, just the debris. It took forever to get not even half a mile. So,
yeah.
It was amazing. And then the next day, when we returned to start salvaging things, I saw the space that I'd actually crawled out of. And, of course, it wasn't just a piece of sheetrock that had slammed over me. It was the whole back of my house. It was my bed. It was my closet. It was the wall that supported the closet. You know, everything had just come down on top of me. And yet what was remaining was that bathroom sink with the cabinet underneath it and the toilet, but the bathtub was gone. So I feel very fortunate.
Well, and they tell people to get in the bathtub, too.
I know. That's another one of those rules, right?
Yeah.
And
well,
yet,
you know,
these
the
days, not so much because of that. The fiberglass they're made out of now is just so light, you know.
Yeah, they could go flying.
No weight to them,
yeah,
like in the old days. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think that when a tornado is that powerful, and you know, I have to tell you, I've always had an interest in meteorology because I happen to have a meteorologist in my family who, from a young age,
uh-huh,
would show me tornado. In those days, there was no website or anything. They'd have like little
right
brochures or things showing all these tornado pictures and things. So for some reason, I was raised on tornadoes, I guess.
I remember those brochures. They had little clip art of a
yeah,
tornado.
Yeah, they did. Or there were even like little magazines that were just filled with photos. I mean, that's what, there were no real chasers back, although actually there were informally,
right,
and he used to work at the Severe Storm Center when it was in Kansas City. But anyway, and so he was very familiar with tornadoes, and I became very familiar. And one of the things I always thought when I moved to Kansas, one of the first things I did, because of my brother being a meteorologist and knowing you were truly blessed to be above ground and survive, because one of the things
yes
that I know I've been told is that some tornadoes, it's really difficult to survive them unless you're underground. And
uh-huh,
unless you're
uh-huh
truly blessed and something occurs, or I don't really necessarily want to use that word. You know, sometimes this is in fact, we hit on a topic here right away that is a delicate one, is that I like to say that everyone is blessed. I know that we say
yes
that those who survived, oh, you know, but you know what? Everyone is on a path, a soul path.
Uh-huh.
And I
absolutely
think that, yeah, and even that in itself kind of embeds a fear of death, don't you think, or an avoidance of whatever our path is
mm-hmm
in life and
mm-hmm
death. So did you come out of this, Anne, feeling that you had a purpose? A lot of times when people have a near death, which you didn't actually have, I guess you could have died, and I'm sure you thought that
yes
that was possible
mm-hmm
at the time. Did you feel a renewed sense of purpose after this, as many people report? Did that come to you quickly, or did it take a while, or what was that
like? No, it took a while.
Okay.
If I look back on this past year right now, I would be honest in saying I don't believe I really came out of shock until probably the end of September.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing to me, and I certainly felt like I was performing well. I showed up at volunteer meetings. I led committee sessions. I wrote articles that I was obligated to write. I mean, I did what I needed to do. I thought I was tracking emotionally and mentally, but I look back on it now and I realize that I probably really wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and I think that, you know, that's one of the beauties of our spiritual selves merging into this physical expression of who we are, because our body knows to protect us and to shelter us even when we don't have a physical home around us. It does what it needs to do so that we can regroup and move forward in our right and perfect timing.
It seems like even your own story suggests that when we have some kind of trauma or loss, do you feel that people need to give themselves space? And I will share with you that we did have a loss in my own family. I was protected. Unlike you, my family's been pretty sheltered from death, which is another, actually that can have its own challenges when you go a long time without experiencing it, and then it happens. And
yes,
although it was not unexpected necessarily, my father died just a few months ago. And so we've been dealing with that in my family. And even when it's he was almost 91, but, you know, it's an interesting process. Even in that situation where you think, and there is a celebration, but there's also, you don't really know what it's going to be like until you're in the situation. And people told me that, because I kept saying, well, you know, he's older, and I'm sure we'll come to terms with it. And there's truth to that. But but what do you, excuse me, what do you advise
part of the Life Preservers process, which that's the name of my business, Life Preservers Grief Support, and my 5-step process actually works clients through this very issue, because what we find is traditionally out of everyone's fear of death, although interestingly enough, just about every religion that I've studied, and I'm certainly not a full scholar of religious studies, but I have been curious about this issue in the perspective of death. You know, just about everyone has a belief in an afterlife of some sort. And so I find it very curious that in this physical part of us, we are fearful, we are doubting, we are so scared, because if we truly believe in the path that our religious or spiritual choices are leading us, then what's the problem? You know?
Yeah, you would think that.
And so what it comes down to is, I think, the distinction between head and heart, the distinction between the intellectual part of us that knows these things, but it's our heart, it's the emotion that misses them, that resists the change, that is reminded of our own mortality, you know? And so the Life Preservers process helps you come into completion with the emotions of that. And you were so wise to point out that, yes, he's in a better place now. At least she doesn't have to linger. At least he's not feeling as much pain as he did.
And all of those things
are so true. Absolutely. And we would not want that for anyone that we truly love and care for. But yet, again, it's avoiding the emotions of the fact that this just sucks. You know,
well,
it's
that
sucks.
Feeling of
tough.
The person being gone. You know, you can't pick up
right.
the phone anymore and talk
Absolutely.
To the person. And you have to find other ways of communicating. And I guess, you know, I've heard
yeah.
so many people say, oh, they're there. And, you know, they're not always, you don't always feel them right there. I mean, that's been my experience
right.
is that, you know,
right.
there are many times when he's just really, and in a way, to be honest, you don't necessarily want them right there all the time. And that's the other thing
I was
going to
say,
realized.
I don't want my mom knowing half the stuff I'm doing now.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, you know, my father was a very conservative fundamentalist or evangelical.
Uh-huh.
And although now I know he lovingly supports my path, which is, you know, has diverged from that. I'm in a much different place spiritually.
Right.
In his life, he might have had a challenge with that, you know, accepting
yes,
what my
yes.
path was. And so, interestingly enough, I went through an exercise right after he died, and I know it may have been my own mental exercise. I don't know where he was right away after I died, but it was almost like, and this was interesting, introducing myself to him, because there were all those parts of myself that I kind of protected him from, because I knew that
uh-huh.
it would be, I didn't want to upset him. If I'm on you
right.
know, some other spiritual path, because for an evangelical, it's really important that you
sure.
stay with that path. And so it was a fascinating way that I kind of reconciled those early times of, well, Dad, this is who I am.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And I felt I did not feel judged by him. I
right.
felt that,
right.
that he was in a loving place. So, but I think that is... You just don't know. I mean, until you're in the situation, you really don't know how you're going to react. And I would say that's even true when you talk about being in a traumatic situation. I'll wager it
yeah.
almost looks worse from the outside when you're actually in it. I mean, in that moment of the tornado, which seems so terrifying to us looking at it, it seems
mm-hmm.
like a lot of people who talked about it, they were in a kind of shock. I mean, it would have to feel...
Absolutely.
So unreal. In the Midwest, those tornado sirens go off all the time. I mean, I lived
right.
in Kansas City, and you kind of pay attention. I mean, I had a respect for them, but you don't really expect it to happen. I mean, you just don't. I mean, it's
yeah,
like any,
that's right.
anything. It's like earthquakes in the Northwest. I've got a lot of Pacific Northwest listeners, and we don't think about having a major earthquake every day. You don't.
Yes, you're
but
right.
it's in the back
right.
of your mind, you know, that it could have, and you don't really know how you're going to react. But we are sheltered, aren't we, in a way that we
yes.
sort of,
yes.
it becomes so surreal.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Now, I did want to let listeners know, since I didn't mention it at the beginning, that you do have a website, which is lifepreserversgriefsupport.com. And to get the exact spelling, it is on the show page. So I do want to invite listeners to check that out when they have a chance. And yes. Now, I think I'd like to ask you some questions. When you were in the recovery process, Anne, did you have people coming to you right away? I mean, what about what happened when you got out, without sharing any personal details of people that you know, but did you have to encounter right away people who had lost someone right there on the spot? I mean, and how were people dealing with that?
No, not right away. What I remember that did happen practically instantly was two young men, you know, just walking the streets, hollering if people were okay, or how many people in that house, you know, concern for the pets immediately.
Oh, yes.
That's really what I remember is the most immediate action that was happening. My neighbor's daughter lived about a mile away from us, and somehow it must have been hours, but it didn't seem like it at that time. But somehow she got to us and she said, "You can come and stay with me." Her back patio had been ripped up and a part of her roof damaged, but the actual house was still standing just a mile away. So I had a place to go for that first night. The other piece to this that we've not talked about, of course, is communication.
Mm-hmm.
There was no, you know, all the power lines were wiped out. So
yeah.
There were no computers. There were no cell phones. We had our cell phones, but the cellular towers were knocked out. And so we were able for a brief moment just to get a couple of text messages out, but no phone calls or incoming calls. And so I was receiving text messages and at one point couldn't respond. And so everyone's saying, post on Facebook, let us know you're okay. Call me as soon as you can. And it's like, well, I'd love to, but
it
won't
be
happening because there's no service. And my phone, I mean, I'm on it constantly. And so I had very little juice left in it, you know. Mm-hmm. You couldn't just go grab your charger and plug it in somewhere, you know. So that was the most overwhelming part for me. And yet once communication was established, thank you, God, for Facebook. I mean, I had one friend who was able to post on my page that I was all right. And that's how many people around the country found out that
mm-hmm.
I was alive, you know. And that was probably the next most overwhelming thing, as phone service was established and people would call me, or I would try and return their calls within 24 hours, you know. I didn't want that to pile up. And so I would call them back and say, hey, it's Ann, you know, I just got your message. And they burst into tears, you know, and that was because they didn't know if I was dead or alive. And I had no idea as to the magnitude of the tornado's path even at that point. So that was a very surreal experience as well.
That's a good point, that it's not as if you're getting the news reports right there on the scene.
No,
what you can
no.
see is what's around you. I mean, for all you
That's
would have
right.
known, it was just your neighborhood.
Exactly,
I mean,
yes.
Little did you know, and you wouldn't know about all the media reports. And for me, if I was getting messages from people I loved and could not respond, oh, my heart would just be breaking for them.
Oh, yeah.
Because I would know that.
Not good, yeah.
Although I guess if you didn't understand the scope of it, you might not realize just how desperate they were.
That's
because
right.
they're watching
right.
that imagery. And I know many of us, I would have liked to have played it, but I'm sure it's under copyright, that I will never, ever forget that audio record. Well, actually, it started as a video. It was a video, but it got dark, of those people in the convenience store,
yes.
which to me was one of the most powerful things. And what struck me with that was not only the tornado approaching and what that would have felt like and, you know, the noise and then, you know, it's how the people reacted. It was really interesting. In fact, I will never forget what sounded like a young man saying to these strangers, I love you, I love you. That man, in fact, it's choking me up again. It was so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean everyone is going to react that way. See, that's the other thing, too, is that
right.
we cannot be judgmental of how people respond in a disaster.
Right.
Some people are going to be frightened. And it's not something to judge. It's, you know, it's based on your life experience as to how you're going to react and probably
right.
your body, too. You know, if you're in shock,
mm-hmm.
some people probably
mm-hmm.
go more into shock than others. I mean, we don't know. But I
yes.
found that interesting. And then another woman was praying very fervently within her own faith. And then, you know, you got that feeling of everyone wanting to help each other. I'm curious
yes.
about that.
Yes.
What was that like? Did you?
This is Joplin's legacy, because that has, I'm so proud, because that has come across on the national and international news, that's what has set our community apart in terms of responding to disaster. And it, as I said, it will be our legacy for the communities that have to go through something like this in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Our president of our local Chamber of Commerce gives many talks now to other chambers of commerce around the state and the country. And one of his key points is that you don't build relationships during a disaster. You lay the foundation and build them first. And
yeah.
So Joplin leadership is very connected with, you know, the city, the Chamber of Commerce, and our school districts. And so immediately they went to work on a recovery plan that truly is a model for the rest of the country.
Uh-huh.
And I think there's a key lesson there for all of us in terms of nurturing and building those relationships that support us and help us move forward, because you never know when you're going to need to really call on them. And
yes.
We did take care of ourselves, and we still are, and yet we are so very, very grateful for the thousands and thousands of people that poured into this community to help us regroup and rebuild. And they're still coming. That's what's so amazing to me. I just heard about one of our local hotels that they're booked 60 rooms for the month of June, and it's a community in Michigan, I believe, that they'll be bringing people down here every week. And so the bus will drop them off on Sunday, go back home, come back on Saturday with a new group, and drop them off and then pick up the folks that have been here. I mean, it's amazing the number of kids that spent their spring break here helping Habitat for Humanity and some
mm-hmm.
of our other rebuilding organizations. They gave up their spring break to come to Joplin, you know? It's
yeah.
phenomenal.
You know, it feels like that's a fairly new movement, and it seems, I don't want to say that it started then, but it seems like after 9/11, that was the first time I really
yes.
heard of such a thing. In fact, I had a friend who she was a nurse, she immediately headed out to New York City, and everyone said, wow, you know, we were so impressed with her that she would do that, and a lot
right.
of people did that. And then after that, they kept it going. In fact, my friend actually founded like a nonprofit that does that and goes to different
mm-hmm.
places.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of these
That's awesome.
Faith communities. And it seems that we really, I feel a shift. Not to say that in the past we didn't help each other, but it's a
right.
really interesting thing how disaster and tragedy like that has been a catalyst for people personally reaching out and giving of themselves, and not just making
yeah.
a donation, literally jumping in their car or planning a trip and
That's
going
right.
out there. And
That's
and
right.
I really think that that is a powerful, powerful statement for this time that we live in, that it's a hopeful time for humanity, even though it's a stressful time in many ways for humanity. Sometimes I think we all feel like we're seeing a tornado coming in one way
yes,
or another.
That's right.
It can be a frightening time right now in the world with all the different things going on. I feel this sense of peace that, you know, we really are a family, and we
mm-hmm.
do support each other. So,
mm-hmm.
And that's really interesting that it continued, because one of the things I had heard is that you know, people were afraid, I don't know if it was that disaster or another one, where are they going to forget about us? You know, this month everyone remembers us, but then
right.
what will happen when they forget? But it really sounds like they have not forgotten.
Oh, no.
And you know, on that note, I know you're aware of things going on for the anniversary, and I wonder if
yes.
you could tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes, well, we have had, again, our city leadership recognizing the significance of this milestone. And so on May 22nd, we will be hosting as a city a Day of Unity. And that includes a walk of unity. And we have about four stops along the way through the disaster zone where some pretty significant events will be happening. One of them that we're most proud of is the groundbreaking, symbolic groundbreaking for our new schools that will be built by 2014. And as you may have read, our high school was destroyed and several other of our school buildings. And the community was able to pass a bond issue assuring that support will be there for our kids and their future. So there will be a groundbreaking for that. One of the churches in the area will that is rebuilt on their same property will raise their new steeple on their new building that day. So recognizing business and industry, the faith-based community, our government and city leaders, we will be looking forward and remembering at the same time. And then the day will end with a gathering at Cunningham Park where the 161st tree will be planted, honoring the 161 people who lost their life in this tornado. And we will, of course, have a moment of silence at 5:41 Central Standard Time when the actual tornado hit. And music and, you know, some speeches and that kind of thing. And prior to the anniversary date, the night before, President Obama will address our high school seniors at their graduation.
Yeah,
so these kids that have been through so much will have the honor of their president addressing them and sending them off into the world that will hopefully leave them a little bit more healed and prepared for life. So there's a lot going on.
I was thinking that when you go through something like that, how do people respond? Is there some post-traumatic stress that goes on if, say, another thunderstorm comes through? I mean, we know in the Midwest, they really do. Those sirens go off and, you know, you have watches and all. How are people handling that, and what kinds of resources are there for them if they're going through some post-traumatic stress? Are they having nightmares or anything that are difficult deal with?
Yes, there has been a lot of that, which is, of course, to be expected. Nervousness over the storms. There are peer support groups that are happening out in the area. There's even one for people who just are fearful of storms in general. So they're there to support each other. Our television meteorologists are on top of it and very good about using social media to, you know, just kind of prime the pump and let us know there's some unsettling weather in the forecast. You know, do what you need to do to prepare, and we'll keep you posted kind of thing. So the mental health center here is, we call them the blue shirts. So they are a disaster team hired immediately after the tornado, and they wear blue T-shirts, and they've gone door to door throughout the whole city throughout the summer, checking on people, making sure that emotionally and mentally they're prepared for all of this. So it's really been a grassroots effort from a number of community organizations, and we're very aware and prepared, you know, with our crisis hotline numbers, et cetera. So, and social media, of course, has played a very big part in this as well.
Yes, yes. And I know that even as the anniversary approaches, there's quite an outpouring of support on social media still. I think this really has stayed quite active in people's minds, even if you're outside of Joplin. I think that, you know, we have that now. It's a really powerful force in our world now. Like you said, how Facebook is so important, and Twitter's another one, how people can just reach out to each other. I want to give you the opportunity to talk a little bit more about the Creative Cottage, the project that you've been working on.
Yes. Well, After I lost the duplex, I ended up staying with friends for the entire summer. I'm so fortunate to have them open up their home because it was really overwhelming to think about finding a new place and dealing with the emotions and trying to salvage things. And so I did not find my next right home until the end of August. And so I closed the end of September, and it is in our historic district. And it's a two-story home, Craftsman bungalow. And the second story was already designed as an apartment, so another duplex situation.
Yeah.
And I had considered breaking through the wall to the downstairs and having the staircase, you know, coming into the room to utilize the whole house. And then, of course, I came to my senses very quickly and realized you're on a whole new budget. You're dealing with a whole new set of utility costs. You know, get a grip until you really know what you're up against. And then it occurred to me that I could move my business upstairs. And so I began to design VIP retreat coaching experiences for clients across the country, creating a space where they can come and work with me personally and still have plenty of time for their own processing and, you know, little spa experience, if you will.
Uh-huh.
And so when you come, and you just have to come, Susan, you really do, I will see that this will always be your private suite.
Oh, wow.
There are two bedrooms, a bathroom, a living room, a fully stocked kitchen. And so you will have that space available to you. I've got a wonderful man in my life who's designed gardens in the backyard with a pergola that you can just sit under and read and relax in the afternoon, and a wonderful shaded front porch that is available to you as well. And my friends started calling it the Creative Cottage because they said that's where people will go to really recreate their lives.
Yes.
And I love that because we know that in any moment we are at choice and we can design the next phase of our life based on the experiences that we, you know, we've had now. And so this is about supporting you as you recreate your life after loss. And then I realized I don't have to limit it to that since it's available. I've gone through the licensing process as a bed and breakfast with the city. Then I can make it available to anyone coming to Joplin for a variety of reasons. And so we just opened on May 1st. That's my little symbolic nod to this month of springing forward and the tornado anniversary. And I have guests checking in this afternoon already. So they're coming for the graduation and to participate in the memorial event. So it's been a blessing. It's amazing. As I look back, I certainly never would have expected to be in this position, and yet look at the hidden gift of expansion. Literally blew the roof off of what was possible for my life before, and just hoping to help others do the same for themselves.
Yeah, that is a powerful lesson, how all of this, I think in one of the descriptions of your show, I described a phoenix rising from the rubble, essentially. and you have to think that this is happening to many people who discovered things within themselves and new paths that maybe they just couldn't imagine existed. And that so often happens. I mean, even in my own life, if you had told me some years ago that I'd be doing a radio show, or I often call into broadcast radio too. I mean, this is growing, and there is no way. I mean, maybe as a child, I used to pretend. I think back to that now, and I think maybe that little girl knew something.
Yeah, right.
I used to,
that's
like,
right.
pretend and record myself and stuff, but it just wasn't a path that I would have expected.
Yeah.
And you know, it came out of my own. You know, that's the other thing, is that so many times in life, you don't have to be in some major catastrophe that everyone knows about, you know, that to experience. I mean, there are little, I don't want to call them little catastrophes, that doesn't quite sound right, but there are moments of crisis in our life. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, I have to say my own awakening and this path that I'm on, which I never would have anticipated. Mm-hmm. I mean, I used to work as a computer scientist.
Oh my gosh.
I was also a stay-at-home mom. When I was in Kansas, I was really lucky. I could telecommute as a computer scientist. That's what I did. I was not on a spiritual path. I was not doing a radio show. I was not writing. I was not doing any of this. And yet my own personal tornado, let's just put it that way, my own personal tornado transported me to a point where I shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And although that was traumatic and chaotic at the time, I'm thankful for that. I think so often, you know, people who've gone through any kind of crisis, you think back on it, and though you know what it was like to go through it, and it was not easy, you think, but you know what? I'm not sure I would change one thing, because if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't be here in this place. And sometimes it's hard to say that. I mean, I have to say, sometimes you say,
yes.
Boy, I really wish that hadn't happened. I mean, you can't help it.
I know.
You have to be
I
honest
know.
With yourself. But on the other hand, you do see the gifts, don't you? You do see the gifts that came out of it. And if you can
and
focus
on that.
And
we recognize that people are on their path and it's in their timing. And so I want to be very conscious of not trying to impose my timetable on someone else, you know.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah. You know, sometimes I think we do. And, you know, one of the things I've often thought about the transition process, you know, when you actually do die at some point,
mm-hmm.
which we all will, is that there must be a point where you see all the gifts, even if you didn't see them in life. I mean, if it was not your path to see the gifts in life, that's okay, because we're all on our own path. But I know that there must be a point where you're shown those gifts. And it helps you to transition wherever we go. And I think there's a feeling of unknown about that. I think that's why people are uncomfortable with death, is that no matter how strong our faith, there's always that uncertainty. You know, do we really have this right? You know, I like to believe certain things about death. And then also, I mean, there are some horror stories that people are taught. You know, many of us were brought up in places where we were taught about hell and things like that. And, you know, that can, if you have any doubt about that, that can be troubling for people as well. So I think it's mostly just the unknown and not, you know, with 100% certainty knowing just exactly what's going to happen. You know, it's like going into a room that you can't see, you know, you don't know where you're going. But you might be able to have a feeling of, you know, in life, I think many of us, as we go forward, we have this feeling, but it's going to be okay. We're able to reassure ourselves.
Right. That's right. That's a
good point. yeah. And as we head into the last part of the show today, there was something else when you talked about the creative cottage. It sounds like a place where people can create as well. And I, when I think about the writers that I know and the artists who can't find a quiet moment in their life to do the project that they really would like to work on, perhaps that's another way that it truly can be a, quote, creative cottage.
Most definitely, yes. You bet. They are all welcome, and I do a lot of writing myself, and so that's kind of been in the back of my mind as well. There are lots of little spaces here that would be very conducive to that kind of experience.
Yeah. Oh, I almost forgot. A friend of mine asked me to ask you a question. It's kind of off the wall, but maybe you've heard this before. There are stories coming out of Joplin that children saw something in the tornado. I've heard it called the butterfly people. I think someone's even writing a book about this. Mm-hmm. Or was it angelic? And that there are many of these stories. I wonder if you could speak. It sounds like you have heard of this, and I'm really curious about it. And others are curious as well.
The butterfly people were everywhere after those first few days of the storm, and it was a wonderful statement of faith with story after story of the children talking to their parents about going through this, and, you know, literally saying, "I wasn't scared, Mom, because the butterfly person was right over there by the cabinet, you know, and didn't you see him?" And
that's
so, you know, the innocence of our children and what they know that we forget, you know. And so that feeling of protection was talked about constantly. Mm-hmm.
So did people feel that they were seeing angels, or did they really know? It's a very interesting thing. And as I said that, how interesting, my dog is, my dog accompanies me as I'm doing my show. And you know how they say every time a bell rings, an angel
gets,
I don't know if anyone can hear it, but she just shook, and you can hear her collar, and it sounds like a bell the minute I said the word angel, which is kind of funny. But I wonder, I mean, it really is kind of a mystery.
That is the predominant belief that, that, you know, that there were angels there protecting us and guiding us, and just as there were so many horror stories of injury and death and so forth. But that became a predominant theme. In fact, I'm on the board of our regional arts center, and we were in the midst of doing a community mural, and the actual title of the mural is The Butterfly Effect. And
interesting.
Because that was so prominent. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting to know that those stories truly are quite widespread. I wasn't sure if it was just, you know, a few people writing about it or what was the situation, but it's really quite a widely known phenomenon out there.
It was the source of inspiration for the whole community. It really was.
Well, how comforting. The voices of children, they saw, and in a way, as a parent, I would be comforted by that, knowing that my child, I don't have a young child anymore, but of course I once did, and to know that my child was comforted in that situation, or even if someone was lost, what a comforting thing to know that they might have been aware in that situation of this angelic presence, and that's often reported in NDEs, near-death experiences anyway,
that
it's as if all of you were having a near-death experience, and you know, the kids were actually seeing what you can see, and that's really something. That is powerful.
Yeah, very helpful.
Is there any contact information if people are interested in the Creative Cottage? As we're nearing the end of the show, I want to make sure that we let people know again how to reach you. Or if you ever counsel people by phone? That's the other thing. If anyone needs grief counseling, that may be listening.
Yes, I do. In fact, my coaching business is primarily over the phone. I also do group facilitation work in person in this area. And there will be a calendar of events coming on the Creative Cottage site. And the best way to resource all of that is to just visit creativecottagejotland.com or the Life Preservers Grief Support.com. They're all connected.
Okay.
And I'm very active on Facebook, so be my friend.
Yes. Well, I'm delighted to be your friend on Facebook, and I look forward to seeing your posts. And in fact, that's a general thing out to everyone as we form this community. It's not just in our local community. Our communities are very large. So I do invite people to be our friends. If you know, look us up, look us both up, and I would enjoy friending new people as well. So, I really want to thank you, Anne, for being with us today, because, I know this is probably a fairly busy time for you as you're getting ready for the anniversary, and even thinking about it, I'm sure it's a whole new type of processing as you come to the year, isn't it?
It is, but it's one that we need to get through in order to move forward. And so we just acknowledge where we're at, we feel the feelings, and we know that it's just in that moment, and we move on to the next one.
Yeah, and that's a good...
And let go.
That's a good message, because I know that over the weekend, because this show is archived and searchable, I have a feeling other Joplin survivors may just kind of wander into the show, because now they have internet access, and it's my hope that they'll be able to hear what you had to say and even connect with you in the area if they're seeking assistance. I really am appreciative, and I'm sure we all are, of you spending this time here with us today.
My honor.
Oh, well, thank you. And just a note to listeners, I will also put the creativecottagejoplin.com link on the show page. So you'll have both of Anne's links, the lifepreserversgriefsupport.com and the creativecottagejoplin.com, and all you'll need to do is click on it. And you can check out everything that Anne is doing. And I really look forward to seeing where life takes you, Anne. I'm glad to know you on Facebook, because I'm hoping to stay in touch, and I hope you will share with us again as things develop. Maybe we'll have to make this a yearly thing. We'll have to check in with you.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah,
that would
be great.
See how you're doing in another year.
I've got two things just very quickly let me share with
you.
Go ahead. First of all, I have a peace pole that is going to be dedicated on May 23rd in my front yard of the Creative Cottage, so that we can extend peaceful and healing thoughts to the neighborhood and the community. And I'm also starting a movement, and I'd love for you to be part of it, called International Letting Go Day. And this is something that just was inspired to me this morning. On May 22nd, people all over the country and the world are going to be wishing there was something they could do to help Joplin rebuild. And my idea is that we all take that day to release one thing that no longer serves you. And what that will do for us personally and for our planet will just be fantastic. But, you know, we were forced by over 200 mile per hour winds to let go of our stuff.
Yeah.
And we realized it is just stuff. And what really remains is the connection to one another. So let go of something on May 22nd. And when you do, just send up a little prayer and good thought for Joplin and for the whole planet. And let's just see what can happen.
Wow, that sounds like something that can really transform the planet. So what a powerful idea. And I look forward to tweet about that. Now that I'm definitely gonna put out a tweet about that one, because
great.
I think people will very much welcome that opportunity. And as you say, it's so important. And you know, when we voluntarily release something, we don't have to be forced. Sometimes, well, often we are forced to release something, but we don't have to wait for that. There are things that we need to release.
Absolutely. And then we just create the space for more good to come. And that's what's happening in Joplin.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Anne. And a word out to my listeners. I hope that you do pay attention to those things in your life that you can let go. And I hope you have a wonderful weekend, everyone, and not one filled with chaos like a year ago in Joplin. I wish everyone a peaceful weekend as we head into summer and surrounded by those you love, and think about your community. I think that's a wonderful reminder from Anne to make this a time of community building as well. So thank you, everyone, again. Next week, I will have Sue Elliott on, who is returning to the show. She's the head of Portland Christians with Questions. So I'm sure we'll have another engaging conversation. And until then, have a peaceful weekend. Thank you so much, everyone.